check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends. Today, we're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, not doing too shabby. You know, living the dream as much as one can. And, I have to advise that it is raining currently. Freaking Hurricane Raphael brought rain my way.
Yeah, it's raining a little here, too, but I don't think it's from that. But it is raining, so not that much. But it is definitely cooled things off here in North Carolina.
True.
And on this episode, we are reviewing the A24 movie Heretic, which is now in theaters, but we've got lots to discuss and talk about before we get there. And starting off with Ike, what did you watch this week?
All right. Well, I, again, got on a little bit of a kick, so I watched a few things. I finished off the Horror in the High Desert movies. I watched the third one, Firewatch. It was pretty good. I watched the second season of Criminal Minds Evolution. Pretty good. Watched a show on Peacock called Teacup.
I've heard about it.
It's pretty good. It's based on a book, I guess, called Stinger or something. But yeah, it was pretty solid. And then I had an itching to watch the Blair Witch movies. So I went through and watched Blair Witch. Blair Witch 2, I think it's called Book of Shadows, which is not very good. And then I watched the reboot from 2014 or 2016 or whatever. It was pretty good. And then last but not least, I watched all of the Leprechaun movies.
What?
I don't know what compelled me to watch those. I was like, what do I want to watch? And I was like, I think I want to watch the Leprechaun movies. And yeah, it was fun. You know, the first one's great. You know, the second one's actually pretty solid. The third one's all right. And then, you know, the fourth one is in space, which is certainly a choice that they made. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not even the most odd choice they made in the whole series, though.
No, I think the, Leprechaun Back to the Hood, was probably the choice that I questioned the most.
Yeah.
Having one of those is fine, but having a second in the hood was, I don't know, it seemed a little too intentional.
Yeah, I wonder how they came upon that. I'd like to be sitting in that storm ideal session. It's
right.
Like, okay, we went to space. What are we going to do now? Let's go to the hood.
Right. I'm just like, bro, I don't know who thought of that. I don't know whose idea that was, but they need to be fired. And then I watched the Origins one that has like Hornswoggle in it from the WWE.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
No, and then I watched the reboot, which is the one that they made a couple of years ago in like 2018, and it was not too bad. They brought back the guy from the original. He was kind of like the one that was kind of slow, Ozzy, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so it was all right. It was a movie. The Leprechaun sounded completely different than he did in the other ones, but you know, hey, they probably couldn't get Warwick Davis back, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you were quite busy with the viewing. And let's see. Yeah. Wow, what did I watch? Let's see. I did a watch through of the Child's Play films.
Oh, there you go.
Watched them all except for I didn't watch the reboot or the remake or whatever you want to call it. I just didn't feel compelled to watch that, but I watched all the others. They're okay. And let's see. What else did I watch? I did watch Black Cab, which we'll discuss more here in a little bit and talk about much more next episode. But I did go ahead and watch that for the first time. I feel like there was something I'm missing. Maybe not. I don't know. I've watched some other things. You know, I watched Tulsa King, which non-horror. I watched Tulsa King on Paramount Plus, and I finished that up, the last episode of that. I watched the Penguin series on Max, so I watched the last episode of that. Both are very good. Those are non-horror, though, but think that's it as far as horror is the Child's Play movies and then Black Cab, which we'll discuss more in the future. So, all right, then, let's move on.
Order up.
Here's one house special cheesy slasher. Enjoy.
And it is time for our cheesy slasher of the week. This is a movie that Ike and I present to you, which is just what it sounds. It's a cheesy slasher, kind of a low budget, goofy movie. Typically, your quote unquote, what we used to call in the past, the straight to video type movie, typically. And this week, we present to you the movie Killer Nerd, which was released straight to VHS in the early 90s, written and directed by Mark Stephen Bosco and Wayne Allen Harold, starring Toby Radliff and Mimsil Dindak. And the movie is described as a nerd is harassed by punks and is enamored by a coworker. Eventually, something snaps and the irritants in his life begin experiencing an nutrition problem. Excuse me. I feel like, though, if through the 80s and early 90s, that description could just, that there's a world of movies that could describe. But the film was produced for $12,000 with a high-grade camcorder and was filmed in Ravenna, Ohio. Apparently, I've not seen this movie, so I'm not speaking from any first-hand experience. This may be the first cheesy slasher that we've done that I've not watched. I've never watched Killer Nerd. I'm sure I will at some point, but there is a blow-up doll in the movie, which actor Toby Radliff kept. Harold Kunkel's glasses in the movie alternated between having tape on them and not having tape on them. So if you're a continuity freak, that will drive you mad. And there was a sequel titled Bride of Killer Nerd, which was released in 1992. Oh, my. So there you have it. And I don't even know what this is showing on online. I didn't even look that up. Not sure if it's showing anywhere for that matter. Probably is. But there you have it. Just do a search on your device and you'll find Killer Nerd out there, I'm sure, somewhere. But that is our cheesy slasher of the week. So let's move on.
Talk to us, Internet!
And it is time for Talk to Us, Internet. This is where we either address some listener feedback or just a discussion topic we have seen online or on social media. And this is something that we have seen discussed some on social media as we transition to the Christmas season. We always like to talk about one of our favorite topics, and that is that we have discussed many times, and that has been discussed here recently on social media as we head into the Christmas season. Is there a need for more holiday-based horror movies? I will, I don't think any surprise to anybody, I will emphatically say yes. I'm always down for holiday-based horror movies. Love holiday-based horror movies. I do think there's a good selection of Christmas-based horror movies, but I think there's always room for more. And, you know, we have seen some things that are interesting. I'd like to see some people try to do some interesting take that does not involve some form of a killer dressed as Santa or Krampus or something, you know. I mean, but, you know, and I'm sure it's out there. I mean, we've got I can't remember the one. What's the one we got just a year or two ago? With David Harbour.
Is it called Violent Night?
Yeah, Violent Night. There you go. That, you know, that was an interesting take. Did involve Santa, but still, it was kind of interesting. You know, of course, we'll have some news on this film coming up, but I'm very partial to Silent Night, Deadly Night. Love that film. I think Terrifier 3 is obviously a very nice choice now to the fits right under the Christmas horror selection. And so, you know, there's some good Christmas horror out there. I believe Black Christmas is one. There's others, right? There's some good Christmas films out there, but there's always room for more. And there's always room for holiday horror for other holidays. We discussed it last week. The what's it called? Hard Eyes, that's coming out on Valentine's Day.
Yep.
That we're getting, which is nice because. We know there's not a lot of Valentine's horror, right? I mean, there's obviously God, why am I just shooting blanks on everything? What's the obvious?
Oh, you're talking My Bloody Valentine, there.
God, my bloody jeez Louise. I just got off work and I'm just fried. There you go. But there's not, not a lot of other selections there. But and you discussed the leprechauns, right? Which are, fall right in with, St. Patrick's Day. And we got Thanksgiving for, Thanksgiving. There's obviously a slew around Halloween. But there's always other holidays, right? I mean, somebody did been to, like, I don't know, like a Labor Day thing, or or an Arbor Day, or a do we have, I mean, I know there's been some, but is there a really strong Independence Day? I think the Purge movies are right around Independence Day,
Yeah,
if I remember right. So, but
think
I
it's
feel like
yeah.
there's always room for more holiday horror. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it's without a doubt. I think that anyone who has ever watched our show will guess that, you know, Dave and I will not shy away from requesting more horror movies in any way, shape, form, method. You know, it is no surprise or shock to anyone that we want more. That being said, it is sort of a niche subject when you start looking at holiday themed horror movies because, like you said, you know, there's only so many holidays and there's only so many ways you can spin a Christmas horror movie, you know, and there are some pretty, you know, I would say pretty creative, like It's a Violent Night or It's a Wonderful Knife, I think is what it's called, right? Or whatever it's
Oh yeah, I
called.
forgot about
Yeah.
that one.
You know, you have like that, you have your Krampuses, you have your, you know, Crazy Santas, your, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Nights, all that good stuff, Black Christmas. So, you know, there are a lot of really creative ways that you can approach the whole concept of a Christmas or just a holiday horror. And I'm always open to that, you know, somebody, you know, doing that. For instance, there's actually another one coming out. It's called Y2K, which is it's a comedy horror, and it's about Y2K. It's about New Year's Eve 2000, when you know the 1999 to in you know New Year's Eve 1999, they went over into the 2000s into the millennia, and a lot of people thought that there was going to be like the Y2K virus and all that stuff. So that's a movie that's going to come out later this year. I think we should probably review because that'd be cool. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is no shortage, and I hope that there will be no shortage in the future of holiday themed horror movies because they're always unique and they always do have to be unique because there's a lot of movies where there's a killer Santa. So if you want to stick out, you really have to be unique, truly.
But yeah, I not but I'm definitely a sucker for holiday horror. Even the
Yeah.
bad ones, I'll give a watch. But yeah, I think it's much like the public domain horror we've talked about. It's just something about it. It just draws me in, and I love the concept. So, but I am glad we're still getting those, and and occasionally we do get the gem. So I guess we got you got to play the percentages, right? You got to make so many to get an exceptional one every now and then. So,
It's like you got to watch so many Thanksgivings before you get
oh,
Thanksgiving, you
I guess one of those was enough.
know.
So, all right, let's move on. Horror hot take. And it's time for horror hot take. This is where one of us, typically Ike, presents a just what it says, a horror hot take, an opinion on something that may or may not be a hot take to a segment of the listenership. So, Ike, do you have a hot take for today?
I actually do.
All right, well, lay it on us.
So, weirdly enough, this one, you know, kind of is timely based on the movies that I watched this week. But, you know, as mentioned, I did a nice little watch through of the Leprechaun movies, and you know, I enjoyed them for the most part. You know, I'm not going to tell you that they were bad or that they were like fantastic or none of that. What I will tell you is this, though. This might be a hot take, and I think that most horror franchises are symptomatic of this. And I'm, you know, obviously, I'm going to give this the caveat that, you know, we've probably talked about this a lot. I don't think that we've ever talked about it in the context of a hot take. But I guess my hot take this week is that, you know, there is a point where you can just stop making movies. That might be an unknown, you know, concept for some of our people in movie production and so forth. But, you know, I sat through and I watched, it's a total of eight Leprechaun movies. And And I will add a small caveat to this that I'll explain in a moment. But I watched these eight Leprechaun movies and I'm like, yeah, this is essentially approximately the same story, just with different actors in different settings. I mean, truly, I mean, Leprechaun 1, you have the people who you have, well, I guess the movie starts out with a dude who finds the leprechaun's gold while he's in Ireland, brings it back to the United States. And then, that one was pretty creative, right? And then, people move into the house and Leprechaun's like, I want my gold, yada, yada, yada. And then you have the second one, which is essentially the same exact story. It's just that somebody else stole his gold. And then you have the third one, which is pretty much the same story, but somebody else stole his gold. And there's like an amulet that he wears that turns him to stone. And then the fourth one, this fucker ends up in space. There's like a 400-year time jump, I guess. So it's just like, I get that they're trying to capitalize off of, the name value of the Leprechaun. And I also get that as a comedy horror series, there is sort of that caveat that the more outlandish that you make these movies, the funnier it gets, right? Like, yeah, of course, the logical leap is that, we made three Leprechaun movies in the States. Let's jump to space. Like, fuck it, why not? So like I get it to an extent, but like there is a point where like you're watching these movies and you're like, why did they make so many of these? Like, why, who's sitting in this room saying, hey, we haven't made a movie about in a while? That fucking Leprechaun, we need to bring his ass back. Let's do this. So again, that is perhaps my hot take, and I think all the greats, they do it. You know what I mean? Halloween has a dozen movies. Friday the 13th has a dozen movies. Nightmare on Elm Street has a dozen movies. All of the greats suffer from just that commercialism where they're like, we gotta milk this motherfucker as much as we can because we want to make as much money as we can. So yeah, take it with a grain of salt.
Well, and that's it, right? The production companies, they don't care about the artistic side. They care about the financial side. And if a property has financial value to them, they're going to put out more movies. And
Right.
a lot of these fell into the time where you could make so much money in the theatrical run, but then you were going to make some money in the video rental run. And some of them, such as Leprechaun, where they were pumping them out, a lot of them were banking or just going straight to DVD, straight to video. And some of them were, and that's what they were just banking on. Hey, we got a franchise that people like, they're going to rent, we're going to make money. And it doesn't really matter how good it is. And the least we can invest into it on production side, it doesn't matter. We're still going to make a profit. And that's all they cared about. And I don't mean that to any offense to any of the creators involved with those, but some franchises, that's the truth, where that, especially when production companies get their fingers more involved in the ownership and the rights to the title, as opposed to the creator themselves and stuff, that are not as protective. But it is what it is. And it's still the same today, right? There's maybe not to the same extent, but there's still value in certain names. And now it's the straight to streaming, right? And if you can get the rights to a franchise name and churn out something for streaming and make some money off that, oh, we're good. And you see a lot of franchises now that are running kind of deep on their sequels because they're still feel they can make a buck off of it. So unfortunately, the movie making side is not all artistic. It's some of it's
No.
just financially driven. And but hey, there's some gems in there that I absolutely love that probably wouldn't have got made if it weren't for just the financial urge. So you win some, you lose some.
Well, as that's what I was going to say too. It is certainly a double-edged sword because this is not my way of saying that, all people should stop making movies. It's just that I don't know. It's sort of that weird dichotomy that, like, I don't necessarily want them to stop making these movies. It's just that I want them to maybe make them a little bit better than they're gonna make them. But at the same time, it's hard to say that because, like you said, a lot of these are, the for instance, the Leprechaun movies almost exclusively were doing numbers on the, VHS releases. You know what I mean? 99% of those movies were released straight to VHS. I think only the first two movies saw a theatrical run. Everything else was straight to VHS. You know what I mean? So it's like, it doesn't surprise me that they are released in that way, because the first Leprechaun movie did pretty decent numbers, all things considered. But the second movie flopped in the theaters. And so they're like, fuck it, let's just make this a straight to DVD release. And that's pretty much what they did with Pumpkinhead, too. You know what I mean? The first one was good. Second one flopped, and then they made like four or five other ones, I think, or attempted to.
Well, that's what they're going to look at, right? They're going to look at, okay, how much did we make rental wise in the one previous? They're like, okay, well, the next one, keep the cost under that because we want to make a profit. And, and that's kind of what dictates. And it is what it is. So, and horror falls into that probably more than anything, right? Because you don't even have to have the same actors and stuff to return for some of these characters, right? I mean, you've got killers under masks, so it could be anybody, really, right? It didn't make a difference on a lot of these, under all the mask or makeup or whatever, and you can keep that primary character and everything else peripherally. Who cares, right? I mean, it's not the same as with some others, right? You make a Die Hard movie without Bruce Willis, and people are gonna be like, "What the hell is this? That's Die. I'm not watching that." But you put Bruce Willis in it, and suddenly there's the interest. It's different with horror, right? It's like, okay, yeah, I'll watch a Leprechaun movie with the Leprechaun. Do I care who's in the Leprechaun makeup? Nope, I don't care. Does it look like the Leprechaun character? I'm good. That's essentially it. And when I know horror fans fall in love with the people under the mask and appreciate what they do, but I mean, look how many different people have played, Jason, and how many different people have played Michael Myers and stuff. It is what it is, and the studios, they feel like, oh, so and so under the mask is cost too much. Hey, we'll just find somebody cheaper and we'll cut some costs there. Because how hard is it to walk around and, swing a machete? And they don't understand, it's a sidebar, but they don't understand that, how much the technique and how it that you really have to be a great actor to do these things, right? Because you don't have facials, you don't have. We talked about this with Rye Barrett from Into Violent Nature, right? He, it was all body language. He didn't speak. You couldn't see facial. So it was, you're relying on mannerisms and body language and stuff. And that's difficult to parlay certain things in that way. So, but okay, there we go. I think we've beat that fire to death. So let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll have our news, birthdays, and all that. So stick around.
Make sure you subscribe to listen to Their Screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. Spread the news. Spread the news.
And welcome back with the news. All right, so as Dave was talking about a little bit earlier, he's already checked this movie out. That Black Cab featuring Nick Frost came out on Shudder on November 8th. It is described as a couple find their jovial cab driver diverts them to a remote haunted road, revealing disturbing motives and his true intentions. And we will be reviewing this movie on the next episode. I've not yet checked this out, but I know it's on Shudder. It seems like a really solid movie. I'm very, very excited for it. So, Dave's already said that, it was pretty decent, but also it's Nick Frost, so I'm always excited for a Nick Frost movie.
And I'll probably give it another watch before we review, but one of those deals where it was out, and I thought, I'm gonna go ahead and watch it. So, but more about that next episode. I'm not gonna speak on it anymore. So
There you go. Easy peasy in like Flynn. Moving on to Cineverse, and Bloody Disgusting picked up the rights to a new take on Silent Night, Deadly Night. It will be written and directed by Mike P. Nelson and is scheduled to be released in late 2025. Now, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Night had a, I would call it a somewhat of a sordid past with how many sequels they made and not all of them being the greatest. So, you know, having it be sort of taken up for a new take basically is probably the best thing that you could do to potentially revitalize that franchise. The original, the OG, is pretty good. So I think that this has a pretty strong chance of being decent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always leery about remakes, especially with what I love, you know, I love so much. And you know, but, you know, it is such a great film, right? In the story, it's pretty simple. It's pretty basic. It fits no matter what. It's an easy thing to pick up from, you know, whatever, 84 when it was released or whenever, and pluck it into modern times. And the concept still works, right? Which is, you know, a fresh coat of paint in a modern time. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do with it. You know, like I said, it's one of those things that can, you know, can really work in any time period, right? Because the concepts behind it and what takes place in the film is, you know, it's all still there, right? I mean, you know, there's nothing that's so set in time for the 80s that it can't be, you know, have a modern take and you don't lose the bones of what the movie's about. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I love the movie. And, you know, not always be partial to the original, but I think the story is strong enough that, you know, if done right with the right people in it, I would, you know, I would very much enjoy a new look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep an eye for that in 2025, probably a Christmas release if I had to guess. But moving on to our last little bit of news, it is unfortunate news that we report that horror icon Tony Todd has passed away on November 6th, the age of 69. Todd was known for his roles, of course, in Candyman, Final Destination, Hatchet, Scream, and many, many, many more. And he will be truly missed. You know, this is something I saw the other day, and I texted Dave, and I was like, "Yeah, wow, holy shit!" Like, Tony Todd died, and you know, my wife told me, and I thought it was like, you know, a fake, you know, because there's always articles about someone dying, you know, and it's hard to know what's real. But unfortunately, this is in fact real. You know, our friend Tony Todd is gone, but he will forever be remembered.
Yeah, it's just so weird because it's just like just seeing him in Stream recently, and you see he's always at conventions, and it's, I don't know, man, it just feels like it's so out of it, you know, out of nowhere, and I don't know, man, he's such a big name, right? This is not just. And I don't mean any offense to anybody, right? But this is just not like some, you know, middle of the level guy that did a movie back in the 80s that was really good. And, you know, whatever. This is a guy that's always been there, right? And I mean, not even talking, I mean, that's just the horror of the stuff, right? I mean, I'm going to talk about the fact that, you know, I love Star Trek. And he, you know, he had a role in Star Trek, right? He played Worf's brother in Star Trek in through The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. You know, he did lots of voiceover stuff, even most recently in the new Masters of the Universe series that Kevin Smith did. He did the voice of, I believe, Scareglow in that and stuff. So he's like, he's done all kinds of stuff that I really love. And he's just such a cool dude. I saw him once years ago, actually at a Star Trek convention. He was there. And it's one of those deals where it's like, I didn't meet him. I didn't, you know, didn't do a photo op or anything with him. But it's like, you're walking by and he's there and he's talking to people and you hear his voice and it's just like, ooh, it just put a chill. Just that voice is like, oh, it just scared you, right? Cause he has such a distinctive voice. And, but all you hear is how, you know, by, you know, both actors that have worked with him and fans that have met him, all you hear is about how great a guy he was and how appreciative he was of everybody and how kind he was. And that's what you want to hear about someone that you, where you, you know, you enjoy the work as you want to hear that the person behind it is just as good as the work you see. And, you know, I've never heard a bad word about Tony Todd in any capacity, at any angle from anybody. And it's just, man, I don't know. It's just crazy to think that we'll, I mean, I'm sure maybe he has a project or two, probably maybe it's not out yet. You know, most people do, but it's hard to believe that, you know, we won't see Tony Todd anymore, in any work or at any conventions
or anything like that. It's just surreal. And then you think though, what, it's like, yeah, it's surreal, whatever else. But then you think, God, what, then there's his family, right? Who's that's, his work and stuff's not at the top of their mind, right? They've lost, whatever, a husband, a father, a close friend, a brother or whatever, it's a whole different level. And it's just, man, it's just sad when anybody dies, but when someone that is truly, iconic, and that word's thrown around so easily these days, but it, not with Tony Todd, right? He is an icon. He's an icon for multiple genres, of multiple, franchises or style or whatever you want to, he is truly an entertainment icon. And man, it just I don't know. I wasn't expecting it when you texted me and I saw that, and I was just never would have thought it. I don't know why. It just really, really caught me off guard.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously we don't want to dwell on this for too long, but it is, and all things considered, he was not that old. 69, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's older, but I mean, people commonly live to be in their 80s, their 90s, you know what I mean? So seeing somebody die, at the age of 69, it just, it is just wild. And like you said, it was very unexpected. There wasn't, with some people, you hear, hey, they're sick, this is something that might be on the horizon. But, like we said, Tony Todd was just recently in stream. He looked fantastic, sounded fantastic. And, maybe he was struggling with some illness that we don't know about. You know what I mean? We haven't really talked about much, but it does seem very sudden, very shocking. So, our thoughts are, of course, with his family. And, he'll hopefully continue to scare us from beyond the grave with any projects he has left. And then, we'll have to continue to remember him for what he has given us. So we'll
Yeah, and
see.
that's, I mean, it's not to say that he wasn't ill,
Yeah.
because, we don't deserve to know everything about their private lives. And and he could, I mean, look at, Chadwick, Boseman. I mean, Boseman, he, was apparently sick through, several things, and no one knew, right? I mean,
Yeah.
some of his peers knew, but you couldn't tell. Right, you couldn't tell as a fan watching his work and this and that. He kept it to himself, and I've not heard a lot about Tony Todd. I don't know if they issued anything. I've not really read deep into it. So yeah, I mean, there could have been something, but then him and his family have a right to, privacy, and they don't need to, we don't have to have that information. We don't have any right to it, but it's just, I don't know, it felt odd. I mean, there's plenty of celebrity deaths that strike you and hit you, right? I mean, but it's just, I don't know. Yeah, you're like you said, because of it just truly did not feel like his time.
Yeah. This is about your time. And well, a as he said in Final Destination, death makes no mistakes. So,
I guess.
but all right, we're going to move on and bring the mood back up here, guys. Moving on to some upcoming birthdays, celebrating the miracle of life. Starting us off on November 14th, 1996, we have Mason Gooding, known for his roles as Scream, Scream. Was that 5'6"? Yeah, I had to remember my Roman numerals for a second there.
Wow.
Man, I hate Roman numerals, let me tell you. And then he's also in the upcoming Hard Eyes. So obviously fantastic stuff. Love them in Scream and Hard Eyes, of course. Looks great. Which, by the way, I saw the first trailer for
Yeah,
the other day when I went to watch Heretic. So it looks good.
that's pretty tough. Yeah, he's yeah, I like Mason Gooding. He's one of the better young actors, I think, out there. That was great in the two Scream films, and have no doubt that think he'll be great in Hard Eyes. So looking forward to it. Looking forward to anything he does in the future.
Yep. Hell yeah. And then, of course, moving on to November 19, 1962, Jodie Foster, known for her role in Silence of the Lambs, as well as a shit ton of other things, but that's pretty much, I would say, the extent of her repertoire of horror movies. She's a much more classier actor than most horror films will allow.
No.
Listen. I am at no mystery or assumption that horror films are not necessarily the most classy movies to work on. I can't lie. I kid. There are a lot of horror films, believe it or not, are very, very well managed, believe it or not.
There's a certain class and an art to the splatter of blood on a wall. I mean, come on.
No, absolutely. I say that, I give a shit, but at the same time, there is a
It's
lot of planning that goes into horror movies.
yeah, it's so funny because it's like I watched that Doc of Chuck, right? The Child's Play documentary, and it was absolutely spectacular. It's just just as good as the others that they did. But anyway, there's one I can't remember. Can't remember which movie or whose death. I don't remember exactly, but there was one where a head was lopped off, right?
Yeah.
And they were talking about how when they did it, at first they had the pressure turned up too much, and it just like the blood shot out like a fire, like a fire. It was just like they're like, "Whoops, we got to do that again. We got to turn that down." And I'm like, "Oh, it's just fine art."
Nah, just leave it in. Crank that bitch up all the way. Let's do it.
Oh, tell me it's not classy.
Right, exactly. Not Cosmokin. Moving on to, of course, November 20th, 1954, we have Richard Brooker, known for his role as Jason in Friday the 13th, Part 3. Now, the Roman numeral 3 is a lot easier than
There you
Roman
go.
numeral 6.
I don't think six is very hard, but okay, whatever you think. Apparently,
But
you just need the scratch marks, right? You just,
I need like the tally marks,
yeah, that's right.
either that or just the numbers. Good.
Yeah.
I figure it out eventually. I just have to remember it's, V is like 5, and so anything before V is either tally marks or the IV, or it's VI is after. So I just gotta remember that. But
Yeah, this has been Schoolhouse Rock with Ike
true. I
on
can
Roman
teach you
numerals.
guys teach you how my brain processes Roman numerals. But
Woo, okay.
the Friday 13th Part 3. This is, of course, this is Dave's definitive Jason, if I
Sure
remember
is.
correctly.
Yeah.
This
Definitive
is the
looking Jason. Yes. The look.
right, yeah. Not his favorite movie, but his definitive looking Jason. When he thinks of
Nah.
Jason, it's Bada Bing Bada Boom Part 3.
That's right.
Because it's the introduction of the hockey mask, of course.
And I like that green shirt, blue pants kind of look. I don't know, there's something about it. Pretty basic, pretty simple, but it's just I just love it. And yeah, Richard Brooker is no longer with us. Died recently, in the last year or two, right? We would have reported his death on the news. So he's not been, gone that long. But yeah, this is the 3D movie. So I'm sure that presented its own challenges in playing Jason. So but I admire, like I said earlier, I admire anybody that plays these characters, because you can't tell me because you don't have lines that it's easy. It's a there's a technique and an art to it. So
Oh, absolutely. I would even argue to some degree that playing a faceless, speechless killer to some degree is a harder job than it is to actually speak. Sort of as we discussed with Rye Barrett, even, playing
yeah.
his role is, it's hard because, especially when you are behind a mask, you definitely have to use your body to get the point across. So,
Depending on the film,
yeah,
some
depending on the
films
film.
they don't care what you try to portray. So, but
True.
yeah, it's a technique of all known. And on top of that, right, Richard Brooker is a very was a very proficient stuntman. So he, I'm sure he did lots of the stunts and that his own stunts, and has done lots of stunts for other things. So that as well is a very underappreciated art, because people see things in film and just think oh, it's just magic. No, it's not magic. Typically, it's someone busting their ass doing the work. Actually, more than one. It's a team of people, right? With the techniques and systems and equipment, and then there's someone putting their health on the line and hoping everything goes right. So it's not movie magic. It's a team of people busting their ass to bring you whatever that 5 second fall that you love to see. So. There you go.
Absolutely.
That's my
Five
hot take.
second. That's his hot take. The 5 second fall. I feel like that should be like a documentary.
I just, I don't know. I just don't. I think stunt performers are very underappreciated.
Oh, absolutely.
And
I
it
mean, look.
blows my mind when you hear of,
big name actors that do their own shit. Like, I'm not necessarily this huge fan, but you hear Tom Cruise doing these spectacular stunts on his own and stuff, and it's like, dude, you're worth how many million, and you make how many million a film, and you're fucking hanging off the side of a plane. It's like, dude, it's like, okay, but
Yeah, he's crazy.
there, well, that's, yeah.
I mean, beyond the Scientology, he's crazy.
I think we've all known that since he jumped on the couch on Oprah, but that's okay.
I'm in love with what was the woman's name?
Katie.
Katie Holmes. Yep, I'm in love with Katie Holmes. Oh, Lord. But
Thankfully, she escaped that. So, anyway, that's a different podcast. So,
that is. Moving on from our Tom Cruise slander, did you know that Warwick Davis actually did all his own stunts in the Leprechaun movie?
there you go.
Yeah.
I love me some Warwick Davis. He's been in lots of good stuff.
Yeah. He's in Willow. They recently did a remake of that, of course. He was part of Star Wars too, wasn't
Was Return of the Jedi? I played Warwick Davis. All right, not Warwick Davis. Wicket, the
There you go.
evil.
Now,
He's
to
in.
be fair, Warwick Davis is pretty mystical, so if he played himself on that movie, would not surprise me.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's very enchanting, if you will. He's a very good,
He's,
nice guy, from what I hear.
yeah, we'll love Warwick Davis.
Sorry, one last thing. I was very sad to hear that he did not come back for the remake of the Leprechaun movie, but at the same time, I'm sure he's probably tired of playing that after he played him for like 10 years, between like the six movies that were t put out between that time.
Yeah,
So I don't blame him, but it's still bummed me out.
his agent called and he's like, "Come on, another leprechaun? Can't you get me anything else?"
He's like, I don't know about that, boss. I don't know about that.
Like Peter Dinklage in Elf. What is it?
You
Call me Elf one more
one
time.
more time. He's like, God damn it, I'm tired of playing the fucking leprechaun. Son of a bitch. Anything else? But good stuff. He's like, I'll play the damn Ewok again.
Oh,
Some
I don't
people
know.
don't like the Ewoks. I like the Ewoks.
I like the Ewoks.
But anywho, moving on to some upcoming movie anniversaries before we get too far down that rabbit hole. November 16, 1984, Night of the Comet. I've never seen this movie, but I have heard of this movie, so but I've just never seen it.
A trip. That's all I'm gonna say. It's a
Good old
trip.
not the trip into the outer space. I'll have to check it out. But a very timely release here, November 17, 2023, Thanksgiving. Now, this review
Woo.
is in our archives. So we're not going to dive too much into this, but this was one of our favorite movies of 2023. And we're very excited for the next film to come out in this franchise. So
That's
yeah,
right.
we're pumped.
Yeah, I've literally said that the John Carver, the not the the whatever the real person or whatever, but
Right.
the character in the film is a is to me the potential to be a very iconic horror character, and I love it. And again, this harkens back to what we talked about earlier with holiday horror. I mean, Thanksgiving was great. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, I think that eventually, if they continue doing what they're doing and they continue the marketability of John Carver, he'll be up there. Maybe not quite with like Michael and Art, but he could be sort of like a second tier,
It's a
on the same level. Go ahead.
little more limited when you're talking about a Thanksgiving. Pretty strict Thanksgiving type character. So yeah, I don't know if it can quite get the, but it's still, I mean, they've merchandised the heck out of it. And I mean, I've got a
Yeah.
John Carver figure on my shelf over there. So, and I love it. I think it's great. And I mean, there's been lots of, I mean, I've seen masks and whatnot. I mean, there's all kinds of it. I love it, right? It's like, do it. And yeah, I can't
Yeah.
wait to the second one. And here we are. We're at that time of year where it's about due for me to rewatch it.
Yep, absolutely. It's coming up. But yeah, and that's on streaming a lot of places too. It's like on
Yeah.
Netflix, and I think it's somewhere else too. I think maybe Max. But look, I think a couple of people have the rights to that. So I think most everyone should have some kind of access to that. If not, I'm sure it's on video on demand somewhere. Or go to
True.
a, I don't know if they still do video rentals.
Oh, some places do.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I know that Redbox is closed up. So, but
Yeah.
I'm sure there's still video rental places somewhere.
I just saw a post somewhere on social media the other day where some guy was talking about the town he lives in is it's a little remote type town, right? It's kind of a, I don't know if it's wilderness or mountainous or whatever you want to call it.
And it's like, so their internet access Wi-Fi capabilities were really, really shitty. So they
Yeah.
had a pretty strong little mom and pop video store in town that still got new releases and everything else because, that's a lot of ways you had to, people had to watch because they couldn't do streaming because of their internet incapabilities and Wi-Fi incapabilities. It was, nearly impossible to stream stuff. So there was still a fairly little prominent mom and pop video store, and I'm like, oh, I want to go to this town now and see this. And they were showing pictures of it, and I was like, oh, so many memories, which is great.
So many memories. I love video stores, but
Me too.
anywho, that's another rabbit hole we could get going down very easily. The old days of video stores.
Yeah, and I've heard about Redbox with it going out. I've heard people saying that when they rent at it, that they're, I mean, again, I'm not condoning or saying anything. I don't know what it is from experience. This is just what I've read. That there have been people that are saying when they rent at, the ones that are as they're phasing out, that their cards aren't even getting charged anymore. And
Really?
so I'm like, that's weird. It's like, okay. What? So do you just not take the video back? Does it take it back? The DVD, how does that work? I don't know. It's been
Yeah,
a
that's.
long, long time since I've rented anything at a Redbox.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, I would imagine that if they you can't return it to the box, you're gonna have to like mail it back somewhere, I guess, maybe.
I
Or just
guess.
keep it. Fuck it, why not?
What are they gonna do? They're gonna write it
Right.
off. They're gonna write it all off.
They are. So, anywho, moving on to November 18th, 1983, another favorite of the show, Sleepaway Camp. It's a classic. Sleepaway Camp is. I think the Sleepaway Camp will forever be one of the best cult horror movies of all time. Up there with the likes of Evil Dead, in my opinion. So, yeah, we talk about this one a lot, but man, it's so good.
If I would almost venture to guess that if there are just a few movies that I say to myself, if I could go and just erase my memory and watch a movie again for the first time without any prior knowledge of the movie, right? Sleepaway Camp would be right near the top of that list because just for the ending alone. And again, I venture to guess the majority of our listeners have seen it, but I'm not going to, say anything in case you haven't. If you haven't, my God, you should. But it's one of those movies that, because of the ending, you really wish you could watch again for the first time to get that reaction of seeing the twist. It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah,
It's
absolutely.
especially when you consider it came out pre-internet days and what it was like. I mean, unreal.
Sometimes I miss the pre-internet days. Sometimes. Not all
Imagine
the
the conversations at schools after seeing that movie. It's like, holy shit, did you see Sleepaway Camp? I mean, I'm not saying it was this huge box office success, but in the little click core nerds that were getting together and be like, did you see that? My God, did you see the ending? Unreal.
I would imagine that that was one of those movies that people went into not totally knowing what was going on, but like you said, pre-internet, and they left the theater like, oh, what the fuck did I just watch? But that's okay. But
Made a Felisa Rosa made a career out of it. Not saying
that's
she's
true.
not not saying she's not done lots of other wonderful things, but I mean, she is most known and will forever most be known as Angela from Sleepaway Camp.
That's true. Yeah, it's not a bad thing. A lot of people make
I
their name
know.
in something and they get popular and they just ride that high horse the rest of the way. That's right.
She embraces it.
Yeah, that's all that matters. But all right, moving on to November 18th, just a few short years later, 1990, we have It, the TV miniseries, the OG. Of course, I think a lot of modern audiences probably prefer the modern It. But Tim Curry's Pennywise and the original It is very unique. And it's certainly something you should still watch, even if you like the current, modern take on it. I think the original still deserves a watch.
Yeah, I mean, I love the original. I mean, I think if I had to pick, yeah, I probably watch the movies, the newer movies. Overall, probably are better, but I think I still prefer the looks of Tim Curry's Pennywise just a little bit better. I love it. I think it's, oh, it's a little spookier to me. There's something about it that's just it's just creepy, and it might be the whole Tim Curry factor. Yeah, I think. If you could take that Pennywise and put it in the other, I think it'd be even perfect. But I mean, but I do love the original very, very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim Curry's Pennywise is something else, but all right. Moving on to our last couple here. We have November 18th, 2022. We have The Menu. The Menu honestly is probably one of the most unique horror films I've ever watched.
Yeah.
It's very clearly a political metaphor and an analogy for, not only consumerism but also just like all the bullshit that goes on with the world. We have basically very pointless, positions that are created to do very pointless things, and it just kind of points out the, how pointless it all is and why it doesn't really all really matter. That's what I took away from this movie, is that, fuck it, this shit doesn't matter, man. So yeah, I mean, it's a good movie, and it's got an all-star cast. I mean, you got John Leguizamo, love John Leguizamo, Nicholas Holt, Anya Taylor-Joy, you have Voldemort, Ralph Fiennes. I couldn't remember his name for a second. I'm like, I just know he played that fucking Voldemort. Yeah, and plenty of other people too. There's a lot of other bigger names in there, but those are the ones I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, I love the movie. I don't think we actually ever did a full like official review of it, but I do know we talked about it
Yeah.
at some point in time when we both saw it. And yeah, it is like you said, it's a very original take for horror movie. It's something different, right? It's not your typical premise for a horror movie. And yeah, and I like it. I dig it. And it's one of those I haven't rewatched. I don't think since originally watching it, and I don't know why. I think I'd very much enjoy a rewatch of it.
Yeah, honestly, I recently rewatched it like a couple months ago, and it was really solid even the second time around. So 100% recommend. And then our last movie anniversary, November 19th, 2021, Ghostbusters Afterlife. This is the one right before Frozen Empire. Frozen Empire is the sequel to this one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, this is the first of the new movies.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like Afterlife. It's not
Me
too
too.
bad. Pays really, I mean, solid homage to Harold Ramis, which I thought was very, very well done. And it was really good. It was definitely, it definitely ranks up there, in terms of modern remakes of different movies.
Yeah, it's and again, when you talk about a great cast, this is a absolute knock it out of the park kind of cast. And this is a it's a good blueprint for taking an old franchise and weaving it into a new take on it, right? Because they utilized the old cast and the old franchise, and they did it in a really great way that seemed it all together pretty well, and passed some torches, and but without disrespecting the originals, and used them prominently enough that it wasn't just a throwaway little 2 second cameo. And it was done. I mean, it's got fucking Paul Rudd. How can you not love Paul Rudd? And it's fun. I mean, I'm a Ghostbusters fan. I love all the Ghostbusters movies to varying degrees. And there's always a lot of trepidation when a film and a franchise from many years back that you really like is trying to do something, a new take or a requel or whatever you want to call it. There's trepidation, and I really think they did well with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. And hopefully they'll make some more movies. I'd love to see some more continuing stuff and to branching, stories, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Frozen Empire was fun too. I don't, you
Yeah.
know, I don't know that I liked quite as much as Afterlife, but it was it's better than Ghostbusters too. So, it was, and it was good. So, hopefully in some capacity, I'm sure it will. I think there's supposed to be a new animated project coming out too, but I don't think the Ghostbusters property will ever die out. It's something they can always do something with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It like you said, it's one of those properties that they will probably milk until there's nothing left, for sure. But moving right along to our upcoming releases. So we've knocked out everything, so we got a couple of upcoming stuff for you guys. Both of these are pretty cool. One of these I'm really, really excited for. But Alien Romulus will be released on Hulu on November 21st. So if you were not able to check it out in theaters, you can check it out on streaming. Alien Romulus, of course, is the most recent entry into the Alien franchise. And it specifically, if I am recalling correctly, takes place between the first and the second movies in the Alien series. But yeah, it's fantastic. Alien Romulus was honestly one of my favorite. I would say it probably is somewhere in my top 10 for the year, maybe. There was a lot of good movies this year, so maybe not. But yeah. It was really good. I enjoyed it.
Did we review this? I feel like we did, didn't we?
Yep, we sure did.
I was like, because I remember watching it. Yeah, we reviewed it. So there you go. Yeah, it's in the archives, a review. So yeah, see, I remember it. Yeah, I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to doing a rewatch. So
yeah, absolutely. Got to go through and rewatch all of the Alien movies and watch it in chronological order of the series.
Yeah.
But good stuff. And then, of course, something we've been talking about a lot, but episodes 1 and 2 of the Creep Tapes will release on November 15th on Shudder. The series is an addition to Creep and Creep 2 and is described as exploring a collection of videotapes from a serial killer who hires victims under false pretenses to film them. Each episode will feature a new victim. We will review this series, including the first two episodes, on our next week's podcast. So the plan here, guys, is that we're going to review these episodes as they come out on the episode that follows the episodes. Yeah. So episodes 1 and 2 come out on the 15th. We'll review that the following episodes. And then a week after the 15th, we'll have one episode and we'll review that on that episode, so on and so forth.
Yep.
And I think maybe at the end we can do sort of like a series recap type deal where we kind of just give it an overall ranking. But I'm very interested in this because, you know, the Creep movies obviously rely heavily on the narrative that this guy is bringing in random people to film for him. And obviously, this is not the first time he's done it in these movies. So clearly, there are other victims. It's just that we don't know about him yet. So I am very, very curious to see how they do this. And it almost seems anthology-esque. It's basically the same story, just broken up into sort of episodic moments. So I'm very excited for this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it says that there's each episode has a new victim. If I'm remembering right, it's been a bit since I've seen him in the first Creep. Is there not a shot or a scene or something where we see lots of videos where he has videos where this is clearly he's done it before?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the Creep Tapes do not take place before the first movie and showing some of him developing the techniques and developing, yeah. You know what I mean? And maybe, you know, maybe they won't all be smooth and super successful. You know what I mean? As he develops his techniques for it. That's kind of what, I don't know that. It's just my gut. Maybe it's completely off, but no matter the case, we have talked countless times about Creep and Creep 2 and how we feel like, yo, these are underappreciated. They don't get, you know, spoke of enough. So I'm super excited that there's something new out there that Shudder's getting it, you know, presented out there, which means it'll get a nice social media push and lots of, pushing out there and the word getting out. I think this is going to be something that people are going to latch onto and be like, oh, this is really, really good. And it'll get some new eyes on the two films. Because again, the movies are so good. And I don't know. I don't hear them talked about enough from what I feel like they should. And because they're really, really great. So I'm super excited about this. I mean, ever since there was word there was going to be something new when they first dropped some hints and whatever, we all suspected, oh, it's going to be a third movie, right? They're, you know, this is what we right. thought. And then they're like, oh, no, it's going to be a series. Oh, cool. And they're like, oh, by the way, it's done. We've already done it. It's already filmed. And we're ready. And it's like, whoa, it's like mind blown. We didn't have to wait too long. They've put out some shots here and there and some tease things and nothing over revealing. But you don't need anything, right? We know the concept. And this is pretty much keeping in line with the concept of the other two. And man, I'm super, super excited. And that's one of the reasons why to us, this is enough in our wheelhouse that it's, you know, why we feel like we're going to review it in, you know, as it comes out in addition to the films we review, because that's how excited we are for this. That, you know, hey, it's like, we're going to talk about it anyway. Might as well do a little review. I'm not saying we'll do ratings on it or whatever, but we'll talk about the episodes and what we thought and how good it was and everything else. And because there's no doubt we're going to talk about it, so
Of course.
might as well put it out there and it advertised a little bit. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. Not to mention it's a Shudder project, so it's like, we love to support them. So,
That's right.
but all right, I think that does it. I think that does it for all of our, news, upcoming birthdays, anniversaries, and releases. So go ahead, and if you haven't already, follow us on social media. I'd like to say right now that, hey, if you don't follow us on social media, you're going to miss out on the stuff when it happens. We post about the stuff as it comes, and if anything up, cool happens between now and next episode, we post about it before the next episode. So with that being said, we're going to take a brief, a little pause, a little break, a little reprieve, and we're going to come back with a review of Heretic. So stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/wrasslepod. That is linktr.ee/rasslepod. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
All right, and we're back here on Listen to the Screams. It is review time, and we are reviewing the movie Heretic, which was released November 8th in theaters by A24, written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, starring Hugh Grant, Sophie Thatcher, and Chloe East. The movie grossed $11,016,055 domestically on opening weekend, which was good for number three. The movie is described as two young religious women are drawn into a game of cat and mouse in the house of a strange man. And I will say, we're going to be spoiler-free on this, but I will say this much. As far as the description goes, that one is an understatement. it is, I will say this, I have always enjoyed Hugh Grant as an actor. I've always thought he does great work in whatever he does. Some of the films he does are not necessarily my style or my type of films that I like to watch, so I don't, I can't speak on some of those, but I think he's very, very talented. And this movie just 100% wholeheartedly backed that idea. He was so fantastic. It holds true to this thing that happens when there's guys you wouldn't expect to play a villain, and when they play one, it just works, right? Because he's a bad dude in this movie, no doubt about it, right? Everything he does is bad, but he doesn't play it like this stark raving lunatic, right? He's very calm, very methodical, very organized, and whatever, however you want to phrase it, and how he approaches what he does in this film. And to me, that makes it even creepier, right? And as you watch the film, you'll see that that's clearly the case. This is not what I'm not going to say, but there's clearly a lot afoot with this guy over time. And to me, that's even spookier, right? The guys that are, there's something about, sporadic and crazy and just off the cuff and out of nowhere. But the people that plot and really plan it out, man, those are the ones that just like, dude, when you get a lunatic that's intelligent and organized, that's truly terrifying. I love the entire premise of this movie. I love how they did it, the way they approached it. I love how they built to it. There is lots and lots of obviously religious overtones, or however you want to put it, right? Religion is the predominant theme of this, and I love the way they utilize it. I love there's a scene with some religious analogies with the religions, the texts, and board games that I think is just super ass clever, and absolutely love that part. I just, there's so much in this that I just thought was really, really great.
And so much of it that was so in line with thoughts that I've had before, and some of my ideals that I've pondered around in my head. I love the one time where he makes it. That's not really a spoiler, but this is one little thing where he says that just imagine when, hundreds of years from now, someone may believe Jar Jar Binks is a religious figure. It just cracked me up. And
Right.
I thought the movie was super, super clever. And typically when you get a movie, a horror thriller type movie that has this much religion topic woven into it, right? It's typically in the form of what? Possession, some exorcism in it, someone getting sucked to hell with the demonic presences and whatnot. And this was different, right? This was completely different, a completely different feel, completely different vibe to all that. It was just very intelligently done. You have three predominant actors in it, right? Actually, is there anybody beyond the four? I mean, there's bit people that they pass here and there, right? When they're out in the street, but then there's the, which what was Topher Grace, right? Kind of their, I don't know what you call him, right? Their minister or
Their
whatever he is.
elder.
Yeah, their elder. He was the only other semi-predominant figure in it. I mean, outside of, that's at best a supporting character.
Yeah.
There's pretty much just the three. And
Yeah.
it is really kind of a limited set shoot, right? There's not much. There's a good chunk of the movie that takes place in one room of a house. And there's a couple other settings, but it's not, like this huge roving landscape. And it all works. It all works for this. It builds to what's happening in the movie. It's just, I mean, I love this movie. I thought it was just absolutely super great. We always are tooting the horn of A24. And it's because they give us movies like this, right? This is, and it made you think, it made you feel, it made you pay attention, right? There's a little blood here and there, right? To give you a little bit of that, but not so overbearing that it was the predominant thing. But there was enough there that, made you there. It was just super well done and clever. And that's sometimes hard to do, right? It's hard to come up with something that I feel is just a truly clever idea that's not really been done before in this capacity.
Yeah.
Not saying there's not movies that haven't touched on these things and blah, blah, blah. But, we've said it before, right? We get a little tired sometimes of, okay, every movie come out that's got a nun and a priest and then someone's possessed. And it's like, you get lots of those and they start to blur a little and you it's like which one was what which one did Russell Crowe was which one of his films was that and it's like and it's no offense to them, right? Some of them are really good, but it's like, yeah, someone do something a little different. And this was to me was different and very clever and very fun. So what did you think of Heretic?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I love Hugh Grant in this. I honestly have not seen Hugh Grant in much of anything. He's been like in some movies that like I did not know he was in. Like for instance, I've seen he's in like the Willy Wonka movie. What's it called? It's just called Wonka, right? He plays the fuck he plays the fucking Oompa Loompa in that movie. For instance, like I don't really know a lot about Hugh Grant. Like, so going into this, I wasn't really sure what to expect from him specifically. Obviously, I knew Topher Grace was in this, I knew Sophie Thatcher was in this, and then the other sister, because it's Sister Barnes and Sister Paxton. Sister Paxton is played by Chloe East, who not super familiar with her work, but she was fantastic. But yeah, to kind of go to what you said, Hugh Grant basically played this sort of methodical maniac in a way, right? And it all seems, and I'll say this much, everything that happens is not what it seems. It's basically the overarching theme of this movie, and it's sort of this weird cascading effect where it's like everything this guy says, right? There's it's a loaded statement. And like you said, he made a very, I mean, I know that, you know, you're not supposed to sympathize with the killer, but like he made a very strong argument and compelling argument about, you know, religion, the roots of religion, you know, why religion exists, and you know what, where the different versions of religion come from, you know, talking about the Abrahamic faiths and everything else. And it's very unique on how he approaches it. And like you said, there's a very, very fun analogy that is made with Monopoly specifically, about the religions. And it was funny because after the movie, my wife Kayla, she's like, honestly, that made a lot of sense. Like, she's like, I hate to give the villain credit, but that made a lot of sense, you know. So that alone is just super fun. But yeah, I mean, you know, Hugh Grant plays a fantastic villain, and then, you know, Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East played very, very, very convincing roles of people who are stuck in a very not so good situation. Like you said, a very close set. There's very few people in this movie, and there's very few locations. You know, I there's a lot of times where people can do a lot with a little, and this is one of those times, is that, you know, while the space in which that they these actors exist seems somewhat small, they also make it seem huge at the same time, you know, and it seems like sort of insurmountable to make it from point A to point B. And it's this movie's full of twists and turns and things that you just would not expect happening. And you know, everyone did such a good job. Like, so we don't want to spoil it, because there's a lot of stuff that I could say that would 100% spoil it. But this movie is heavily rooted in the concept of religion and sort of finding faith, losing faith, and everything else. And I think it has an overall, not a horrible message, you know, that, you know, about how to figure out what to believe and things like that. So, yeah, believe it or not, there is a positive message in this film, despite it being a thriller horror movie. So, yeah, so without getting too far into it, because I don't want to spoil anything, it was extremely good. I would recommend anybody who, you know, loves thrillers, crime, you know, even religion to some degree, watch this movie, because it is solid, you know, had me hooked the entire time for sure.
Yeah, and in the description, the term cat and mouse is absolutely just spot on for this movie, right? Because
Right.
none of the characters are truly what you believe to be at face value when you're watching this film. They all have different layers than what is you are led to believe early on in the film. And there's a lot more to them, in different ways, right? I mean, especially, you know, the dynamic with the girls and what you think, who you think, how can I say it? Each of the roles, right? The power dynamic shifts a little, and there's different. The way it works in the end, right? There's a lot there, right? There's more to all these characters than what you see throughout the film, and it's very much a cat and mouse, right? It's a very much a chess game between, you know, victim and or you know, victim and whatever, Hugh Grant, victims and Hugh Grant.
Right.
And it's just well done, and it's yeah, it's a very, very good film, and I very much look forward to seeing it again when it comes out, you know, video on demand or streaming, because I feel like it's one of those films that when you watch again, you're going to pick up on even more that maybe you didn't really notice the first time through, because I feel like there's just a lot of depth and layers here that that there are to the film. That I mean, there's just kind of so much, right? I mean, just the way the board game analogies, the music analogies, was just it was brilliant, right? With the this lineage of three songs in the film they discuss, and what happens, and it's just wonderfully the analogies drawn between religion and these things, and you know, religion and these board games. Religion and these songs, and it's not so much the board games themselves or the songs themselves. It's the development of those things, so to speak, right? And it's not so much the religion. You just have to watch it to get it. I don't want to give it away, But it's very, very beautifully done in how they draw these analogies and how he his reasoning behind these things and how he breaks it down. And like you said, I mean, it's just I would think anybody with a half open mind would watch it and say, huh, guy, the guy was a little weird, a little crazy, but you know what is he made some points. It's like maybe he acted upon them in the wrong way,
Right.
but it just a great film. Great film. So let's rate this thing. I'll go first, like, because it's pretty simple to me. I am hands down giving this thing a 4 out of 5 screams. This was a super great movie, easily above that middle of the ground, right up there in 4. It's almost even clever enough to want me to push a little further, but I'm going to stick it with a 4 and just know that it's a very strong 4, never in question, never any thought of it being below a 4. So I'm going to stay there, but it is a very, very clever film and very, very original. So that's what I'm giving it like. What are you rating it out of 5 screams?
Yeah, honestly, I have to go the same route. When I left this movie, I said this is a 4 out of 5 for me. And then I slept on it, and when I woke up, I said, you know what, it's still a 4 out of 5. So, like you said, it was a very strong, very compelling movie. Just all around very unique too. That was the big thing, is that this movie did something very unique, something that we really haven't seen before. And that's incredibly important when it comes to the day and age where there's a different horror movie being released every week. And yeah, I gotta say it was spectacular, and it's one that I'm glad I went and saw in theaters. I think the theater experience enhanced it as well. So if you haven't checked it out, certainly recommend doing so.
Yeah, and I know I have used the word clever 5 million times today. I understand that. I'm fully aware of that. So before anybody lambasts me online for my use of that word, to me it is the most appropriate term for this. It is very, very clever, and its approach and its execution, everything about it. It's just so smart in how it's done, and well done, well done. So. And like we mentioned earlier, next episode, we are reviewing the movie Black Cab. I don't know why I wanted to just cram that together as one word. Black Cab, which is on Shudder, starring Nick Frost. And plus, we will be talking about episodes 1 and 2 of The Creep Tapes, also on Shudder. So a Shudder-heavy episode next week. Super excited to talk about all of that. We want to say thank you to our wives and all of our listeners, followers, subscribers, etc., for all of your support. Your interactions and everything. So, Ike, before we close this out and get out of here, anything else you want to throw in?
Oh, just I'm trying to think. Hopefully everyone out there is staying safe. We're coming up on the holiday season, and I just hope everyone is doing well out there. And if you are doing well, we'll look forward to hopefully some time off this Thanksgiving. And I hope everybody's sticking with it. No hurricanes right now, so I can't report on any hurricanes in the Gulf, thank God. Other than that, just stay cool, stay awesome, and again, rest in peace for Tony Todd. And that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, everybody get your practice in and condition yourselves for the grand feast coming up.
Yes.
Eat and eat well. So, but enjoy everything, right? There's lots of people get lots of time off. I know some people don't, right? I understand depending on what you work, what field you work in. But there are people that get lots of time off through this last part of the year. So enjoy time with your family. You have some spare time, hey, watch some horror movies, right? We mentioned it earlier. There's some Thanksgiving horror movies. There's plenty of Christmas horror movies. There's something to fit the season. So there you go. But remember, it's all about spending time with those you care about, and do that. So until next episode, when again we are reviewing Shudder's Black Cab and episodes 1 and 2 of the Creep Tapes. Wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.